tonight to Thursday. And we're interviewing Mr. George Campbell on High Street. And he's going to tell us about anything he knows about the Bath County history.
Okay, did she start off wars or something? Or any?
Well, first of all, how long have you lived here?
I was born in Bath County in 1927. But I left here in 1945 when I graduated high school. And then lived various places around the United States. Came back here in 1978, and then 30 years.
Where did you You were also a pilot, weren't you, I think?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was a flight engineer, employed as a flight engineer, Transamerica Airlines, and that's where I retired from.
What was, I guess, the school like here that you attended the school here?
At that time.
I went to school the first year to my mother. She was a teacher at the Brown Schoolhouse at Churchburg, Flat Creek. And it was a one-room schoolhouse with 8 grades. And the reason I started with her, because I wasn't old enough to go to school with the others. So I started when I was 5. And as soon as I reached my 6th birthday, then I went to town to the old school building up here where the new courthouse is. And the 8th grade's when they built the new school building, which is now the middle school. So I had the 8th grade in it. And the high school was in that building. And I liked the school. I didn't like going to school. I didn't like being confined. But my favorite teacher was Miss Clara Arnold. She taught math. And she was very good.
Could you tell us about the economy of Bath County, different things? Has it changed much?
Oh, it's changed immensely. Betty and I were talking just the other night. When I worked at Indianapolis, nobody made a lot of money, but everybody worked. Like the salaries now, I saw on television here yesterday, the governor of Georgia is wanting to passed a bill where they're going to get a lottery in Georgia. In this bill, any high school graduate who made B's, they will pay their first 2 years tuition, providing their parents didn't make more than $66,000 a year. Well, I've never made $66,000 in 1 year in my life, and I thought I was pretty well paid as a pilot. But I found out school teachers make more money than I did. But as I say, back in well, being a depression baby, see, I was raised during the Great Depression, and I didn't realize we were poor. I had a good time. We had plenty to eat. Plenty, it wasn't a big variety of food, but there was always plenty of beans on the table, you know? And all the kids were in the same boat. Didn't anybody of us realize we were poor. You know, this is the way things were. We enjoyed life. We didn't have television, but we had radio. Actually, I remember my first radio station, or first radio program. This was about 1932 or 3, my father bought a radio. And Joe Lewis was fighting Max Miller. Well, you remember either one of these guys, but all the neighbors came over. We spent all afternoon hooking the antenna up and getting this radio ready, see, because you had to have an outside wire, a big long wire for the radio. And all the neighbors come over to hear this fight. And I think it lasted about 56 seconds or something. Joe Lewis floored Max Miller, just knocked him out just immediately, you know. So they were all disappointed, in a way. And yeah, things were a lot different. I noticed today, I sat on my front porch out here and there's at least 10 cars a minute go around this corner. That's every minute from 6 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. At 10, an average of about 10 a minute. When I was a kid, if 10 cars a day went around this corner, it was a busy day.
Yeah.
You walk where you want to go, you know, if you want to. I used to walk from here to Ford's Mill to go fishing, and down to where the VFW is, that's where we went swimming, down there up by the Lions Club. And that was an everyday occurrence, you walk down there to go swimming. You had no car. Lucky you had a bicycle. But we were happy. We enjoyed life.
Can you tell us about some things that, some other things that have changed? I mean, then
in general.
Well, the biggest change is the economy in a way. It was very few people were on relief. Now, my mother worked for the WPA project came about shortly after this. And she had a job. She was a home visitor to go visit people to see if they actually needed relief goods. And I used to go with her during some time. Because, you know, you could hire a babysitter and take the kids with you. And we would go to Salt Lake and distribute the commodities. Grocers would come in and she would go out and give them to the ones that were eligible. And I can remember these men walking out of the woods and they would have their legs wrapped with croaker sacks and newspapers and such. And I asked them, what's that for? Rattlesnakes. And because they live pretty far up these little hollers, you know. Wasn't nearly as many people then as they are now. That's like this last census. Whoever did that couldn't count. Because it said we only gained 3%, but Bath County gained 30% if it gained 1, you know. But the people that were on relief at that time, they needed it. Now we have people on relief. I don't think they need it. Just like that program the other night, the conning and the fraud that goes into it. And when this, the jobs didn't pay as much as they do now, but everybody worked. Everybody had jobs. Some sort of didn't pay a lot, but my first job out of high school, I made $125 a month. When I quit flying, I made more than that in a day, you know. But I'm still not making what some of the teachers make. You know, that kind of gets to me. I shouldn't do this because you're all going to school and teachers are curious.
I'm not worried about that.
But I think all teachers should have a degree with some meat to it. When I say meat to it, I'm talking about a degree in physics or math or history or English or something that's got some backbone. Now spend another semester or so and get their teaching certificate. Don't get a degree in education, because I don't know, I haven't met too many people that's got a degree in education that's really qualified for much anything. Not that. So they need to have a degree in something with some meat to it. That's like a degree in education is like having a degree in physical education. You've got a college degree, what's the point for? Kind of like the old sergeant says, he tells his fellows to sweep the floor and so forth. And this one guy stands up and says, I'll have you know I'm a college graduate. He says, okay, just a minute, when we get time, I'll show you how. So that's the way that is. No, I guess that's what you call professional jealousy or something. I used to have to put in some awfully long hours, bore holes and thunderstorms and so forth. And we flew in the Arctic. If you look at that map up there, you can see the pins are places up there. And you can see the one way up there on Elshmere Island, which is only 200 miles from the North Pole. And I was up there in the wintertime. And it kind of hurt me to find out the little girl that washed dishes in the oil camp that we stayed at made more money than I did. And she didn't have to go out there and fly no airplanes in this turn that came back. But at that time, I was making $36,000 a year, and she made $40,000, and she washed dishes at the oil can.
Well, you've been quite a few places, haven't you?
I have been to 28 different countries on 6 different continents. The only continent I haven't been to is Antarctica. When I get that boat finished, I'm going to see Antarctica.
That must be nice.
It's been interesting. Nice? I wouldn't say nice, but it's been...
Different experiences.
It hasn't been dull, let's put that... Boredom was one thing I can't stand. If I ever went to jail, I'd probably commit suicide. But there again, you put yourself on a boat out here, it's like putting yourself in jail for a few weeks. But that's different because you're moving. As long as you feel like you're moving, you're doing something.
So you keep things with the boat, you're going to stay all the way around the world just to add
if, again. If my health holds up, then I have been as far west as Aniwetok. See the little white? The colors on these pins don't have any meaning. I just put them on there so they show up. But I've been as far west as Aniwetok. That's that one you see out there in the middle Pacific Ocean. And as far east as Ahmedabad, India. That's the one over here, the red one over here in India. And that, if you like about that much, going all the way around it. So when I get the boat finished, I'm going to close that gap.
Do you know how much longer it'll take you to finish your boat?
I hope to put it in the water in November the 15th is my target date. Of course, I'm only 5 years behind schedule now. But I think I might make it this thing. The reason for November the 15th, I put the first pole in the ground and scaffolding out there. On November the 15th, it'll be 7 years. Mm. I hope to have it in water today. It won't be finished because I can, a lot of the woodwork, I could finish it haphazardly, not do a very good job, but I want some woodwork. This is a yacht, you know, it should be beautiful inside. I want to do the woodwork right, and that takes time. But I can do that while I'm sailing. If I'm riding trade winds, say from Panama Canal over to the Galapagos Islands, that's 3,000 miles. And it's 125 miles a day, that's going to take 20 days almost. So that can make the time I can sit there and whittle and carve and fit. So that's what I plan on doing. I plan to make the boat livable and then finish it up whenever. If it takes me another 10, 20 years, who cares? You know, that's the idea of the boat. You know, get in a hurry. You do what you want to. And that's it. See, I was born in Olympia. And where I actually lived in was 50 feet of railroad track. And we never heard of trains. Of course, you know, I'm a baby and I was born and raised there. We moved there, moved to Owensville when I was 4 years old. And then we moved back to Olympia.
Okay,
we moved back to Olympia. About 1943, maybe before that, I'm not really sure. And I graduated in high school in 45, worked on the river boats. I wanted to join the maritime service, and my father wouldn't let me because I'm only 16 years old. And you had to be 18. At 16, you had to have your parents' permission. And he wouldn't sign the papers. But he said, I'll make a deal with you. If you go to work on a riverboat and you stay 6 months and you still like it, then when you come home, I'll sign your papers and let you go. So I did. I worked on the riverboats for 6 months to the day. And then when I came home, I was scheduled to go up on the Monday to take my physical exam for the Maritime Service. And I set off an explosion on Sunday and broke both legs. So consequently, I went to the Maritime Service a couple of years later. But, and that changed things quite a bit. Most everybody knows, or my age knows, about my mom. It was a year before I could walk very good. But I recovered pretty good. Now I'm beginning to get arthritis in these joints that were injured. But there again, that's something you have to live with when you start getting old. When you get up, you got a new pain. It's wonder what's going to be tomorrow. You got to ignore it and go on about your business.
Could you tell us something about the train? Was it big here? Or?
Oh, yeah. We had several trains a day. And you set your clock with the trains, practically, and you went to the post office when the train went through. Of course, they'd throw the mail bag off and hang the mail bag up on a stand. The train had an arm reach out and grab it as it went by. But they'd just throw the other one off, and one guy was going to try to catch one day. And he caught it. Mail bag took him over the bank like killed him. Because the train's doing 60 miles an hour, you know, or maybe faster. I don't know about that. But as I say, I was born and raised up to 4 years old right alongside the railroad track, and they never hurt the trains. And even when I moved back to Olympia, the first week, the train's coming through whistling and making so much noise, it'll wake you up. But after a week, so you got some sleep right through it. Didn't bother me at all. During the war, I would ride the train from Ashland from Lexington to Olympia. And when I had my legs broken, I did that quite often. I'd go down to see a doctor and I'd ride a train down, a train back.
Did many people ride the train?
Oh, yeah, yeah. All during the war, it'd be standing room only. The trains would be full and people would be holding on to the barbed wire. And it's hurt me ever since, because about 4 years ago, I drove from New York City back here. And from New York City to Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania, it's a six-lane highway, and it's bumper-to-bumper trucks all the way. And I thought, oh, this is criminal. We've done away with our trains, and now these damn things, you can't even drive your car because the roads are just filled up with them damn things. We need to get the trains back, because we need them. Because one train put 100 trucks off the road, you know? Well, more than that. I've seen a lot of trains with over 100 freight cars on it, and a freight car haul twice as much as a truck. So here you got 100, put 200 trucks off the road, one train. You know? So we don't need all them. That's what a waste of fuel, you know? Ridiculous. But we've done that to ourselves. One of the big things that's done that's been the concrete companies. People don't realize that, but they want to sell that concrete to build highways. And the more cars and the more highways we have, so that's a big lobby in Washington, is the concrete companies. They're against public transportation. If we had public transportation, it wouldn't need as many roads, you see. Europe has lots of trains, and it's fun to ride a train, and it takes an awful lot of cars off the road. When I went to school in Amsterdam, we stayed at out near the airport, and we had a rental car. But I didn't drive the rental car downtown. I go downtown, can't find a place to park. It took you longer to get there than it did to ride the train. And then you can't find a place to park or nothing. And so just go get on the train. You're down there within 30 minutes. Take 45 minutes to drive it. And then after you get there, you can't find a place to park it. So we need to get our trains back. Trains and buses. And I thought that was criminal when the CNO took the track up.
Do you know why they did that?
I guess economics, I don't know. And then the state lets it sit there and go to waste. The state should have bought that and made a bicycle path out of it or something. You know, they could have had people from all over the United States come to ride a bicycle from Lexington to Ashland. And have parks along the way. They could have made money. But let grow up weeds.
It's true, isn't it?
I sound bitter, don't I? I am.
Wow. Could you tell us something about the agriculture?
Well, tobacco's always been a big crop in Kentucky, especially in this part.
Has it improved any?
I haven't seen much change. They probably grow more now, and it's probably bigger. But, the techniques are basically the same. They used to burn the tobacco beds, and where now they gas them. And they used to set by hand, because people couldn't afford the setters. The big difference was, the farmers didn't have any problem finding people to help them house their tobacco like they do today. And people enjoyed working. You know, this is part of life. And apparently now, a lot of people, if I can't make $10 an hour, I'm not going to work, you know. But that's not the way it should be. It's like after, you see, I was forced into retirement because I had a heart problem. And it was 2 years that I didn't draw any Social Security. I couldn't get my retirement because I couldn't get an answer out of the FAA. They wouldn't say, yeah, I'll let you go back to work, or no, you can't go to work. It just took 2 years to get an answer. So there was 2 years I was getting pretty hard up, and I grubbed stumps from a buddy out here for $5 an hour. And, you know, kind of a letdown when you'd been making $38 an hour to come down to $5, but when you want to eat, you do it. And there's my granddaughter. Who are you going to let listen to this thing?
Ralph Bailey.
Ralph? Oh, okay. Ralph and Mrs. Bailey, they're fine people. They understand why I'm bitter.
I heard something about, something I ever heard about last night was something called murder caves or something like that. Do you know anything about that? It's I guess where Indians took a bunch of men and women and did something. Okay, we'll skip that since we don't know anything about it.
Now, John Adair Richards, he wrote a book on history of that county. And my mother was starting to write a book on the O&O Railroad. And we're talking about railroads. Very few people knew this even existed. They had a railroad that ran from Olympia to Owensville, the O&O. And I haven't really been over there to look, but they tell me some of the old scaffolding stuff where the depot used to be here in Owensville still exists. Most of the track's been taken up. And she used to tell stories about they would ride the train to school, the O&O. And coming up Town Hill was quite a pull for it. But anyway, one day the train was late, and they were picking dandelions or something, and laid them along the track. And the train couldn't make it up the hill because it didn't have enough traction. So they had to go down the bottom of the hill, and they had to back all the way back to Olympia. Because they had to get up here to turn around or something. Of course, this is long before my time. But I think it would have been an interesting book if she'd lived to finish it, but she didn't.
Yeah.
And there may be some people here in town that remember that thing. I'm sure there are.
Do you know of any special things that happened in Bath County? Any events or anything?
Goodness. Nothing.
You was talking about the Depression. Did anything major like that happen affect that county?
Well, of course, the depression affected the whole world. During the depression, my father had, he worked for the railroad. He drove spikes on the railroad. And I think he made $28 a month. So he had another job on Friday and Saturday nights. He would be a town marshal here in Austin. And many of the time I could remember him come in as bloody as a hog, because they'd always have a good fight on Friday or Saturday night, and the cops would be in on it and usually get whipped. So I can remember him many times coming home, beat up with black eyes and cut and so forth. So Owensville used to be quite a lively place. We used to have a bowling alley alongside where Charles Lee's hardware store is. There was a bowling alley in there, but it burned. There was a tavern just down the street from called the Dutch Shop. And all they sold was beer and ale, but it was wet at that time. And as I say, every Saturday night used to have a good fight there in the courthouse yard. Saturday night, the farmers would come to town to buy their groceries. They'd buy enough groceries to last for a week. And because you didn't have enough gasoline to drive a car to town every day, you know, gasoline was expensive. It cost 15 cents a gallon or something, you know, but that was expensive. And so once a week they would come to town and do their shopping, and of course that was a good time to visit. You hadn't seen Joe Blow for this last week, so I didn't go ask how he's been doing. And that's when the young people did their courting. They would walk around town and make it to girls and so forth. And it was actually a fun time to live. Nobody was rich. There wasn't a rich person around. But everybody had a good time.
Could you tell us about Sharpsburg or any place around here, anything else that happened?
Well, Sharpsburg used to have free movies, and we'd go over, outdoor movies outside. Every Saturday night they had a movie, and it was usually a pretty good picture. I don't know who sponsored this or what, but it didn't cost you anything. You could go over and sit and watch it. And I've been to several of their movies. And my father was from Sharpsburg. I never visited Sharpsburg very much, so know very little about it except going to the free movies on Saturday night.
Do you know about Salt Lake or Olympia?
Of course, now I lived at Olympia quite a bit, and Olympia was quite famous for feuds that they had prior to my time. My grandmother was telling me about some of these. There were some pretty tough characters out there. There's one fellow who'd been in a fight, and this one guy had another one down and says, "Now let you up, you not shoot me." He says, "Okay, I won't." As soon as he let him up, he shot him, and his brother come up, and the two of them emptied their pistols in him and killed the fellow right there. And she said she was close enough, she could hear the bullets thump when they hit his body, you know. And so it was a rough country. It was still in existence when I was a kid, and they tore it down, and my grandfather bought some of the doors out of the old hotel to put in his house. You know, beautiful big drawing doors or something, I can't remember what they were. Don't even know what kind of wood they were. But, he bought some of those, and he bought a mantelpiece. But there again, when it was in its prime, it was long before my time. That made the depot there at Olympia quite famous, because rich and prominent people from all over the eastern United States would come into Olympia to go out to the springs to soak, you know, in this book, make them feel better. So Pit Springs Hotel was quite fancy. The story is that Henry Clay owned it at one time and lost it playing poker underneath one of the big old oak trees out in the front yard. But who knows how that ever.
Do you know anything about Salt Lake? Or?
Well,
very much besides the train.
People you want to interview to bring you up to date on that sort of stuff is Lester Shrout. His father had taken numerous pictures of Salt Lake. Salt Lake used to have a policeman that was.
They used to have a hospital there, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, Ellick brought a lot of brick from the old hospital. It's in this walkway up there. The antique brick where they chunked down the burn. And Salt Lake was quite busy too, you see, because it was railroad ties and lumber and so forth. The trains would stop to pick it up. So Olympia and Salt Lake were busy places. Holmesville, I don't know why it grew up and the others didn't, but it did. You know. It's like I never understood how the internal combustion engine took over from the steam engine, but did. Still far superior, and we have to put up with these stinking old diesels and gasoline and the filth that they put out. But New Girl's not interested in that lecture.
Do you know of any other places around town that stood back in time for, like, any old buildings that are not, that are now not existing, that have other places sitting in their places?
Like the school. The depots are gone. The depots had a particular design. The Morehead still has a depot. And of course there's a beer tavern in one end, I don't know what's in the other. But it's still one of the old depots. And they were all built along that same design. And the it had a different smell. Now, the steam engine, I keep bragging on it, but they burned coal. Blew out an awful lot of black smoke, and it stunk. The depots had that smell of sulfur. You burn the sulfur in the coal. And the trains were. Inside were usually pretty clean. They had double windows on them, if I remember. But in the summer, they would, this is before they had air conditioning, they opened the windows and, boy, you'd just get black with the smoke from the train. Especially had on white clothes, you know, they'd get filthy. But in the winter, the trains were quite clean, and later on they came up with air conditioning, and the trains were all air conditioned and good. And I'm trying to think of any other buildings other than the old schoolhouse they tore down. Of course, their water tower, they just took it down a few weeks ago. And I was looking at that steel, I was amazed at the condition of it. Still almost. It hadn't deteriorated, but maybe 10%. It was built, or what they told me, it was designed for 150 mile an hour winds. So it would still withstand 125 mile an hour wind. It hadn't deteriorated hardly at all. Other than depots in the school, that's the only two I know.
Do you know anything about, like, when the war fell on, how Bath County, how it affected Bath County? Maybe?
Quite a bit. We had the walls of the courthouse up by the sheriff's office and over by the county clerk's office. Those whole walls were covered with a sign with the names on it of the boys that were in service. And then a gold star was put by each one that was killed. And we're talking about names that were probably written 2 feet across and 2 inches high.
Do you know what year this was?
Oh yeah, that were started, what, 41? They put those up about 41. And then to help with the 4 effort, we'd have the scrap drive. And in the courthouse yard, we had a pile of scrap metal, mostly steel, but any aluminum or brass or something was sorted and put in the other side. But the steel side was the western yard. And all the scrap pile would be 20 feet high. Anybody had any steel or any metal that they didn't need, they took it up there and threw it on the scrap pile. And then how often they came in with the trucks and picked it up and took it to mills, I don't know. And, I say every family in Bath County was had a member in the armed services somewhere, at least one. Most of them had 4 sons, they were all in there. Any of them might have had a daughter or two. And my sister took her nurse's training. She was a cadet. And of course, both my older brothers were in the Army. Now, as I say, I missed the draft because I was 4F and never examined. I had both legs broken and was hobbling around on crutches on my 18th birthday. So I wasn't drafted, and by the time time I got over it, well, they had done away with the draft. But I went in 49 and was extended a year on account of the Korean War. So I was during the Korean conflict. I never got to Korea, I got down to Utah. Yeah, very patriotic people in Bath County. Didn't have any draft dodgers. That was
so, like, when the wars were going on, what was it, 68, 69 or something?
The Vietnam War. That wasn't a very popular war. But Bath County never treated soldiers like they did some other places. You know, they always greet them as heroes when they come home, regardless of what war they were in. You know, defending your country, so.
So not many people here protested?
No, hardly any, if any. I don't know if a soul did.
They wasn't into that peace and whatever.
No, there wasn't any Jane Fonda's in Bath County.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing a, I guess it was a video or a movie of some place where they had Woodstock or something. I was amazed at how the people acted and running around naked and stuff. And it was wild.
No, Bath County's always been
supporting.
Yeah, good basic American families, family attitudes, you know, what Bush likes to brag about, that's what we were. And that's what we still are, I think, you know. But, we have some filtration of drugs and so forth in here, it's all over every place. I moved from California back here, hoping to get away from drugs, and get back here and find out hell's just as bad here as it was there, you know. And, but there again, I think the basic family attitudes in little communities like Bath County are so much stronger than they are in cities that we can survive this stuff that wipes other places out because of the family ties. And not just the family ties, the relationships we have with each other. If somebody gets sick here, the neighbors come by and bring them food and so forth. And but if this happened, if you're in New York City and got sick, tough, you're gonna die. That's ain't nobody gonna help you. You're just out of luck. You know? But that's not here. You know?
You know about any more of the history of Bath County? About houses or places people lived, or why certain places were named for what they are, like Owensville or something.
Of course, the Owens house, the race between Colonel Owens and somebody else to build a big house. So. You probably know as much about that as I do. And you get John Adair's book on that, John Adair Richards. Now he wrote a book, The History of that County. I've never read it. I should go up to the library and get me a copy and bring it home and read it, because it's very interesting. But, like my friend Illich now, I think he's read it, and he knows about every family in the county and so forth. But he loves to read. I don't. I'm lazy. I read for effect. I read to learn how to build something, how to make something better or something. And as far as reading for pleasure, I get pleasure. I learn how to do something else. But it's just to read what somebody else did a long time ago. And novels, I've only read two novels in my life. And that was because I was extremely bored at the time. I read one of Mickey Spillane's novels. The other one was Call of the Wild. I kind of enjoyed it. I read it when I was in school.
Seems like I've read that one too. I'm not sure. Do you have any more questions? None? Do you have any? Well?
So, tell me about Bath County. The big changes I've seen is the number of automobiles and the number of people. It used to be you could drive from here to Salt Lake and probably, once you left the city limits of Owensville till you got into Salt Lake, there might have been four, maybe five houses between here and there. And now you can hardly tell when you leave Owensville until you get to Salt Lake, you know. And there was trees, woods. And this is something else that bothers me. I hate to see people cut down trees for any reason. Of course, you need lumber and so forth, but these people just clear out trees to make more pasture land for cows. They're destroying the country. That's why it's like down in Brazil. 20 acres a minute have been destroyed. And this has been going on for years. Now, how long are they going to keep that up? And once the rainforest goes, it's going to change the whole climate of the whole world. We'll probably turn into a desert here, you know. So I figure if you got it, be like India. When I was in Ahmedabad, India, every tree had a number on it. And I figure if you cut a tree, they'd probably hang you from it, you know. And now Europe has beautiful trees in Germany and France, and they take care of their forest. And here we're trying to see how fast we can cut ours down. That's what I don't like about Bush. He's subsidizing the foresters there in Oregon to cut down the trees to send to Japan so they can make junk send back to us. Well, I don't like that at all. If they can't pay the price, put the price of anything that goes overseas, especially any of our raw materials that we ship overseas, up the price so much that they can't afford to buy it, you know. Because Japan doesn't have natural resource one. Look at a little country. It's not much bigger than California, you know. No natural resources at all. But yet they're one of the world's biggest producers of things. They make things. And what are we doing now? We're feeding them our natural resources from here. And that's not the way it should be. They buy a car, we make it here. We don't sell them the material and make a car and then we buy it back from them. We ought to build it here, sell it to them. But we're slipping bad. And the one thing that makes the United States great is its forest, its trees. And
Once you cut them down, you're done.
Right out.